Wendy, I mean, your book is set right here in Colorado. There are a lot of themes in it that people will recognize as a local theme. I suppose the fire is in it, a wildfire that so many people that will resonate with them. But really the backdrop to that is a search for identity and mystery around somebody's identity. Yeah, take us through those different themes and how you explore them in your book.
Yeah, the book is set in Colorado and does have themes of fire and also family secrets and loss. And so I started writing this book about 10 years ago when a coworker of mine passed away. And as we, you know, thought about his family, we took up a collection at work to just get some donations for his spouse. And then we got a note from corporate that said, you know, you can't do that because it could have tax implications. So this is kind of in the era before GoFundMe, those types of things. And so that really made me ask the question of what are these structures that we interact with all of the time and that are very present in our daily lives that get in the way of us appropriately caring for people, whether it's our coworkers, our loved ones, our spouses, whomever. And so a lot of the themes of the book, while it's focused a lot on family secrets, come out of that idea. What are the structural things that get in the way of us taking care of people?
Well, one of the big barriers, I suppose, that the protagonist of the book, Melanie, has to overcome is just the her true identity and this big secret that has been held by her family. This is going to resonate with so many people because this is something that we see happen all the time. And actually, I was thinking about this recently. I saw an ad on television recently for one of those genetic testing things. And I think it was actually, I thought it was funny. It was tied to Father's Day. It was like, why don't we get this for your dad? And it was, I think, 21 and me. And I thought it was kind of amusing because I've been reading more and more reports about families that have actually been torn asunder because of this type of over-the-counter genetic testing when people realize that who they had thought were their parents were not in fact their parents. Now, this isn't really necessarily part of your book, but that whole idea of the story that we're told about who our family is or the secrets that are imposed upon us. Why was that something you wanted to explore?
It's something that I wanted to explore. I mean, for some of the reasons that you just cite is that we find out things about ourselves sometimes and maybe we don't want to know. So it's, you know, it's not a secret in the book to the reader who the parentage of the main character is, but it's a secret to her. And so it is that question of should it be revealed or should it not be revealed and the consequences of that.
What were some of the challenges about setting the book here in Colorado, in Denver? I mean, we start earlier on in Melanie's life and then we go ahead to her as an adult and she's here in Denver and then there is a backdrop of a wildfire. I mean, did you do research to make sure, okay, the geography is correct, the fire, you know, and how, because how people write about things like that can vary. You were either going into it as this is a very factual thing or I'm just going to base it all in the realm of fiction. There won't be any real street names, anything like that. How did you want to approach it?
For Denver based places, there are real street names. But the town that the family originates from is a fictional town. And some of that is to provide some leeway. I didn't live in Colorado in the mid-70s where some of it is set. So that gave me a little bit more leeway in terms of creating details about place. Because you want to be able, you want people who live here or did live here then to have recognition. But you also don't want to pull them out of the idea of dream of fiction if you get something wrong.
Tell us a little bit more about the Santa Fe Writers Project and what that is.
So the Santa Fe Writers Project is a mid-sized press that puts out a number of titles every year. So it's an independent press. It publishes fiction, nonfiction, fantasy titles, a wide range. And so founded about 20 years ago and continues to issue a wide range of titles.
But Elizabeth Gahagan, you are also published through the Santa Fe Writers Project. Now, your book is a collection actually of short stories. So and that is called Epo.
April, yes.
Is there a common thread amongst the stories, or are they all completely separate?
I think that they build to a sort of crescendo, and the common thread is that they are, well, there are eight stories, each set in a different city or country in the world. But largely, the stories are what I like to say, confront the intersection of geography and intimacy. And they tend to be stories about women alone in the world, looking for something they can't quite find. And there's often a sense of exile. And sort of intimacy or intimate connections are really hard to, it's hard to gain any purchase within relationships in these stories. And counter to that, then the places become sort of more magnified in each of the stories. And there's a lot of description of place and landscape as a kind of character that is the continuum throughout the collection.
So each story is set in a different location.
Yes.
Give us a sense of some of the locations, because they sound very integral to the stories themselves.
Well, there is a 70-ish page novella that's the anchor called Eight Ball that's set in Denver and Boulder with some flashbacks to Long Island or the Hamptons. But I also have stories in Bali, in Bangkok, in Paris, in Rome, New York, Seattle, Chicago.
So are these all places you visited?
They're mostly places I've lived.
Oh.
With the exception of Bangkok, I've passed through and I've spent several months in Bali, so kind of lived there, but, or accumulated a certain amount of time there. And I do live in Rome now, but I studied in Boulder, so.
Did you have a different experience writing based each different place? I mean, all of those places are so completely different. I mean, was it a different experience? Because many of the readers won't have visited many of the locations.
That's true. And I wanted it to be a kind of way for readers to enter into locations that they might never see. So that's why detail is so important to me and trying to make it authentic, which kind of speaks a little bit to what you were discussing about, should you use the real street name or should you make it up? And I tend not to label things specifically, but sometimes I do just to, if I know it's right. You know, with Rome, of course, I've been there 20 years, so I know I'm getting it right. But I don't know. I think that it doesn't matter if you've ever been to Southeast Asia. You can still appreciate a story set there. And I didn't really struggle to bring them to life, really. I do find it easier to write about places when I'm not in them than when I am in them, which is something that Tiffany and Wendy and I were discussing earlier.
And sometimes why is that? Are you too stuck in the moment if you're actually in the place?
Yes, I think so. I think you need a little distance, particularly if you're really attached to it, or if it's where you grew up, or if it's where you had formative experiences, even tragic experiences. You need both time and geographic distance to sort of sketch it out as story. So I don't know. I didn't find it hard to kind of conjure those places because I had the actual distance from my perch in Rome, sort of. I was able to kind of remember Seattle in the early 90s or what have you.
What's the process of writing a short story like compared to, say, writing a novel? Have you written longer format books in the past?
I have, but I haven't yet published a novel. And I would say that I came to the short story form very late and almost as a sort of default because I was so busy teaching and with other, you know, living my life and trying to make a living that I suddenly decided, oh, maybe I should write something I can finish and kind of pare it down to a shorter form. But I think the short story form is very mysterious, and it would be hard for me to describe how I approach it because I don't map things out. I don't work from a plot point of view. I tend to work from sound or image. And when I get a sound or a line in my head, I just run with it.
It does seem that there's a whole other skill set involved with writing a short story because you don't have that length to build up characters or build up a sense of tension or whatever, you know, plot mechanism you have. You've got to get right into the heart of things pretty much immediately.
You really, really do. And I think when I studied creative writing, I felt like I was a kind of minimalist in my approach, but I was trying to write a novel then. And weirdly, I now think my writing is kind of Baroque and my sentences are quite long for the short story form, but somehow it comes together on the page. But you definitely need a different skill set. You need to be able to kind of cut through to the heart of what you're trying to convey and distill the key emotions that you want the reader to feel, I think.
Well, Tiffany, your book is a long format, right? It's a novel.
It is.
And as we're talking about here, I mean, everything's got a place and an identity. Tell us a little bit about yours.
Yeah, so my book is set, it starts in the Mississippi Delta and then moves to the Florida Everglades. I was born and raised in Mississippi, so I kind of joke that at the age of 21, I left Mississippi kind of as quickly as I could do so. But then when I really got serious about my writing, I write about almost nothing else. So I guess I didn't leave, actually. And the book, you know, the places where it takes
the setting is a really important part. I think, like Elizabeth was saying, I do consider setting to be kind of a character. I do consider it really integral to the story that's taking place on the page. So it matters a lot to me to get the details right, or in the case of my Mississippi Delta town, to create a fictional place within a very real geography.
Now, because you grew up in that area and then you left, you're writing about this, I suppose, somewhat detached. I mean, you're not there at the time. Do you have a sense that you have to be loyal to that place? This is where you're from, in terms of how you depict characters, how you depict the place, because you can take a position when you're writing about somewhere in terms of how you actually portray it. It can be positive, it can be negative, it's hard to be neutral, really, I think, when you're writing about stuff.
Yeah, I don't think anything's ever neutral. But I try not to be either, you know, completely positive or completely negative. I actually try to look at it with the lens of truth, if I can find that. And there is both. There's both positive and negative things. There are things that I love about Mississippi still to this day. And there are many reasons I wanted to leave. And I try to show both of those. I try to show both of those things on the page. And I'm particularly, I will say, a lot of the work that's been, I think, set in Mississippi through the years has either been of sort of a gentried Mississippi, sort of wealthy society type Mississippi, or very, very poor backwoods Mississippi. I tend to write about working class people in Mississippi. I grew up with a father who was an iron worker, a mother who generally held two jobs. I mean, we were striving for middle classhood and passing for middle class most of the time. But in truth, we were a working class family. And that's what interests me, is this idea of how working class people survive and move forward and fall back and move forward and fall back.
Of course, a big story around working class people, particularly white working class, in the last 4 or 5 years is the fact that we haven't been telling their stories in any kind of an authentic way, either maybe in fiction, but certainly not in mainstream political discourse.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the people that I grew up with probably do feel left out of the conversation in many ways. And I'm not looking to tell any particular, you know, any one particular side of a story. I mean, I definitely write fiction. I am interested in plot, but also in character and in setting and in theme. But I am very interested in making sure that the world knows that these people exist and they are not cartoons. They are not the cartoons that you see on the evening news where they go and find the, you know, two guys sitting on the back of a truck and interview them and say, here is your working class Mississippi, or here's your working class South. That's not who we are.
And I think that's where I was trying to get to with that question about when you write about a sense of place, do you have a loyalty to it because you're from there? Because so much of the popular culture portrayals of the South and that particular region can be very stereotypical, often very negative and very inauthentic.
Absolutely. I mean, it's something that the minute I moved away from the South, which I did want to do, I grew up reading a lot and I knew that there was a wider world out there and I wanted to leave go to places with more opportunities and different sorts of people and people who were perhaps more like-minded. The one thing I discovered pretty early on is that when people would ask me where I was from, because at the time I had a pretty heavy accent right after I left, and I would say Jackson, Mississippi, there would be responses like, oh, I'm so sorry, or that must have been horrible, or thank goodness you got out. I mean, which is, in some level, what I was trying to do, but on another level, highly insulting, you know? So I pretty quickly learned that when people underestimate you that dramatically, just based on where you're from, there's almost nothing you can't do to shatter their expectations. And I got a little, I don't know, I would say mean about it in some ways. But I softened my accent. I tried to get rid of it, which I kind of regret at this point.
You still have a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. But I did what I could to try not to present myself as one of the negative stereotypes. It's harder to defend an entire region, though, when that's what shows up on the news.
Well, how does that then manifest itself in your book?
Yeah, I mean, my book is about people, individual people, and not about a big stereotypical, you know, group of people. And so I think that any time that you focus on the individual as opposed to the collective, you have the benefit of seeing people making hard decisions, making sometimes the wrong decision for the right reason, sometimes the right decision for the wrong reason. And I really try to focus on motivation and the fact that most people, I think, are well-intentioned. Most people set out to do good. They don't always succeed. They sometimes trip up along the way. But in the case of the book, in the case of The Past Is Never, you know, the whole thing starts when these children go swimming in a rock quarry where they've been forbidden to swim because their father says it is actually evil. And their youngest sister goes missing in the course of that. And so that's the, you know, the loss that they experience early on. And the book really examines how the remaining siblings go about looking for not only their sister and their father, who also disappears, but looking for answers about what family means, what it really means to, you know, exist in this world without the family that you thought you had. And they start to question sort of what Wendy was talking about with the idea of parentage and the idea of what family is also are themes that are raised in my book. They discover that maybe their family is not what they thought it was.
I mean, that's a huge connectivity with your book, Wendy, If the Ice Had Held, about this idea of the idea we have about a family when what we thought we knew about our family turns out not to be the case, whether it's a major issue like Melanie's dealing with in terms of parentage or a major family tragedy that can shatter a family in many different ways. And you both explore them very differently. I mean, is this a theme that comes through in some of your stories, Elizabeth?
I think it is. I think these women that are looking for intimacy are often sort of on their own and kind of disconnected from family. And I weave in a bit of their backstory or their familial history as I go, but not too much. And you get a sense of isolation and loss, and you're never quite sure why they do the things they do. And then I think when you get to the last story, which is a coming of age story, it kind of almost operates as an explanation for how these adult women turned out the way they did, because you get the family story in a more sort of intense way in that final story.
Yeah. I mean, and that really reminds me of, you know, just speaking with Tiffany and Wendy as well. It's like where we end up as adults is so much connected to where we came from as children. And I think at some point then you make either a conscious decision or a subconscious decision to shed some of that and become who you are. It reminds me of what you were saying about maybe shedding your identity, that other people were almost imposing on you, and your accent being part of that too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a difficult thing as a young woman, I think, to go out into the world where you weren't raised, to go into new places and have people have such an immediate sort of code signal that says you are from a place that people don't think very much of. And so that's something that I struggled with, I think, throughout my 20s. Now I don't care. Now I think it's, you know, it's something that I have come to terms with. But for a while, I really struggled with it. And I think a lot of young women in particular struggle with that, being from many different places when they go out into the world.